I want to dedicate my remarks today to the victims in San Bernardino. And this morning, I want to talk about terrorism. I want to talk about dislocation and a sense of homelessness that is so pervasive throughout the world. And I want to talk about the preeminence of the synagogue as a bulwark against the forces of chaos and destruction which come to us too often in the world. And before I begin, I think it's always worth reminding people that when a rabbi speaks about politics, my goal is never to convince anyone of my opinion. I actually don't think that's possible. The goal is to share how I process the world at some deep level. It is to share the thinking that I develop out of my encounter with Torah and how that connects with life. And then it is ultimately to challenge and push your thinking to help refine your thinking as it evolves in the encounter with another person who is wrestling with the world. So my story begins on July 31st of 2002. It was lunch hour, and I had just finished the last day of one of my Ulpan classes at Hebrew University in Israel, in Jerusalem. To celebrate, we went to the Frank Sinatra cafeteria. Normally we brought our lunch. Yes, there's a Frank Sinatra cafeteria. It's got good food, and it's right outside the building where I was studying Hebrew. I was online, and I was going to go sit with my friends, Ben and Marla, Jan, but some other friends, people I didn't know as well, were in front of me at the line at the checkout. And I decided, well, that when they asked me, I'll go sit with them. And because of that invitation, we're here together. Because just a few minutes later, the bomb went off. The bomb went off, and the very first thing I thought as a one-time chef was that a gas line must have exploded, because that's the only thing I knew that made that sort of a noise. And then the roof tiles came flying down like a helicopter, or like those maple leaves that helicopter down to the ground. And I thought, oh, this is not a gas line. This is a pagua. This is a terrorist attack. And then I thought, oh, so this is what a terrorist attack is like. There were screams. There was a smell of burnt flesh. There was this mad motion of the crowd to get out of the cafeteria as fast as they possibly could, like a herd of animals running from a wildfire. And outside, I saw things that I don't need to recount here, but that we hope the human eye doesn't have to ever see. From that moment, I've spent a lot of time thinking and learning and reading about terrorism. And I think there are a lot of different lenses by which we can come to understand it. And there are truths in many of those. Today, I want to speak about just one lens. What I mentioned are called dislocation. In the very beginning of our parsha, we hear Jacob settling, trying to settle down, Vayeshev, Yaakov. This is a man who has been running his entire life and is trying desperately to find a sense of rootedness. A man who spent 20 years in what should have been a family home with his uncle, but which we clearly understand was not. And this is a man who sends his younger son, Joseph, out to find his brother, and the Torah tells us his line, he did not know where his brothers were, Joseph. This is a type of dislocation, a homelessness that is not just something in the Torah and not just the story of our ancestors, but something which pervades so much of modern culture. And on a personal level, Laura and I know much about this. We moved here just a few months ago. And if you've moved, you understand that everything has to be rebuilt, that you are a ship in some way without a rudder or an anchor. And while I am getting to know you, we're not friends in the way that comes from years of intimacy and knowledge and bearing of our soul, because home takes time. Home is a structure, a network that helps us get through life. I want to share with you a rather profound comment from the former chancellor at JTS, the great Ismar Shorsh. In writing about Vayeshev, he says, "We American Jews are forever relocating, albeit not to escape persecution like our forebears did. Yet frequent moving puts Jewish identity at risk. It takes time to build the social networks that temper our self-centeredness." Let me read that again. "It takes time to build the social networks that temper our self-centeredness. Families with deep roots often exhibit a well-developed sense of responsibility to maintain what history has rendered sacred. The price of our celebrated mobility is a house without heirlooms." A house without heirlooms. We're not the only ones who travel through the world now. More and more, this is the state of the world. And we are facing, certainly, when we look at ISIS, an entire movement that is without a home, without a country. And we are looking at lone wolves and terrorists who have been stripped of any sense of community and the way that community does indeed calm down our self-centeredness. Let us be known. This is the age of dislocation. And we see what comes out of it. We see how it makes us unbeholden to those around us, how it reduces our sense of responsibility. So, what is the role of the synagogue in all of this? This is something I have struggled with also for a long time, particularly when I've seen Jews give huge amounts of money to non-Jewish institutions, because a pediatric oncology ward is immediately available to us, the work that it does. And we can say, yes, that is a good cause. But the story of the synagogue as an answer to dislocation and terrorism, to rootlessness, is a story that is not told quite so well. Because by the time terrorism occurs, the only answer that's left is the military option. And it's too late by then. Institutions, religious institutions at their best, are developing the very rootedness and connection that prevents people from losing a sense of purpose and meaning. And it's not enough just that we come together, though that matters. The rituals, which sometimes seem like a nice thing that we got handed down to us, that take time to master, like our B'nai Mitzvah, master the prayers, are a way of investing in connection that extends backwards through time to our time as well. And one of the things I think which is so counterintuitive about culture is the harder it is to get those goods, the more valuable it is. We live in a conservative congregation here, and to learn the skills to daven, to lead a service, takes effort. And that effort binds us together because we have invested. But there is a way that synagogues and churches and mosques at their best become places where we're known not just by our faces, which sometimes is as far as it goes, but at a deeper level, that we're seen and that we're known. And I have spoken about the importance of dialogue work. The professional staff here has a retreat this Wednesday, and we'll be doing some training around that. But dialogue at its deepest is the ability to say who I am and express my truth from my perspective, and not in a way which demeans others. It is the way that we can take off the masks and the hiddenness and the fear we have to connect with one another. And when we build institutions like that and those tools, we step beyond mere civility, where we're polite to one another but remain unknown. And we are seen and accepted for our beliefs, for who we are. And that, to me, is the greatest antidote that we have against hatred and callousness and violence. And it takes a lot of time and effort and resources to build that. Which is why it sometimes seems like we suspend our money, our resources, our energies elsewhere. Because it's so obvious that what this place does becomes invisible to us. These institutions that we build and sweat and labor and come to know one another are the very foundation of civilization. And we live in an age where schools cannot teach values anymore. And we live in an age where in college universities, safe space means that we cannot be known because you cannot say what you think because it might hurt my feelings. That's the very opposite of a safe space. That is the definition of tyranny. And tyranny will destroy and bomb and shoot and kill. A safe space is where we can talk from our vulnerability and hear and respond from our vulnerability. That's what civilization is. And it is the thinnest veneer, stripped away so easily, as we saw again in San Bernardino. Now, most of us are not here today. We know that. But we are. And it's our job to build and to strengthen and to share and to find the ways that we can be deeply authentic. Because when we do that, we build those bonds of responsibility and connection. And we also understand from that encounter that the world will never be perfect, and that you will not think like I think, and that we will be different. But because we share that love, we will be able to endure the discomfort that comes from difference. It's why I'm a conservative rabbi and not in another part of the world. We tend to have such diverse congregations. We come from all ways of thinking and acting Jewishly and politically. And that's what makes us the most strong, because society is the place where we live with people different than we are. I don't think that story is told about the conservative movement, but to me it is one of the greatest features of who we are and why it is important that we build that. We are an answer, one answer
to the chaos and the hatred and the needless deaths that the news and the world bring to us. We should be proud in that. We should celebrate that. Let us build on that. Shabbat Shalom.